Let me see it. Is it cute?
Yeah, it's so cute.
Send it to me. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Okay. Look what I just posted. Brunch with these two dum-dums.
Oh my gosh, so good. Is this good? I said Sunday Funday with these idiots.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. So, so cute.
Okay, so cute. Look what I just posted. Eating crap with these sacks of if they died tomorrow, no one would shed a tear. So cute.
Wait, what the hell?
You called me a dum-dum and she called me an idiot. So.
Yeah, when you post a pic of yourself where you look really cute, then you have to say something a little self-deprecating so it doesn't look like you're just bragging.
Oh, all right, this is good. Okay. Slapping down some pig with these fat and I'm the fattest of them all. If I died tomorrow, no one would shed a tear. Load my freaking lard carcass into the mud. No coffin, please, just wet, wet mud. Bay.
Jesus, Brenda.
All right, I got ya. Gulping down some pig with these bags of meat. Sunday Funday with these pig b****s. Hope nobody gulps us.
So, are we the pig b****s or the bags of meat?
Okay, let me try another one. Sitting here with two bona fide pieces of hog b****. They're mad because I won best hog at the hog snarfing contest. But I'm not mad because we're all loads of beef sitting on the side of a highway getting our butts sucked by flies. I tagged you both in that.
Why?
Why are you guys bullying me?
TBTL.
Maybe he saw his reflection and thought, I'm flying in hot for that hottie.
It's like your own mini garden. And, well, now that you think about it, it's kind of fun seeing how good it grows. It's kind of like, you know, kids. Like, it's kind of like kids growing up.
My podcast is on life support. Hey, I need new listeners.
I want to be the bad boy of public radio, like Elvis Mitchell.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Thursday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Here we go again.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
I just want you to be normal, and clearly you're not.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, where, my goodness.
Man, it is nasty out there.
Woke up this morning, it was so dark. So very dark at 6 in the morning. And check the weather app. And let's see. Today is Thursday, the 23rd of January in the year of our Lord, 2020. And for the foreseeable future on the weather app, which is the next, all the way through next Thursday. I guess that's a week. Is that how calendars work? That's as far out as the weather app goes on my Apple brand iPhone. Every single day is going to be raining all day. As I wrote on Twitter, because this is how I process my emotions now, I'm going to try to email myself to Palm Springs like as an attachment. I feel like there's got to be probably a way to do that now in this day and age. Because it's going to be dark and rainy and sad here in the Northwest for the next week. But, as I like to say, it's warm and dry here inside your podcast. So the good news,
the fun begin,
is we're going to still have some fun here on episode 3082 in the collector series. I mishit my little bell, and the sort of how tepid that was, that maybe that was an indication how little confidence I have in the idea that this is going to be a fun episode of the show. No, I know it's going to be a fun episode of the show. Why? Because we have some entertaining top stories, and I mean that very genuinely. First of all, a court has blocked Aerosmith's drummer from playing at a Grammys performance with the band Aerosmith.
I'm ready to smoke the world with the rock and roll. Good deal.
This is this story, you know, sometimes when we talk about sports on the show, we say, well, this isn't really a story just about sports. This is about human behavior. This sort of transcends the X's and O's of sports. This transcends music. This gets into group dynamics and what is happening with the band Aerosmith right now. Like, you don't have to care about the music of Aerosmith to get that this is a deeply weird event that we're going to try to untangle a little bit. And then speaking of rock and roll concerts, there was an interesting article in the Minneapolis Star asking, how long should a concert be?
This is so boring and forever taking.
On the other hand, there seems to have been a rash of extra short concerts coming through the Twin Cities and people being upset that their favorite artist played like 40 minutes when they paid a bunch of money for the ticket. So we'll get into that. And because it is a Thursday, a.k.a. Blur's Day.
It's my birthday today.
We got some Blur's Day messages and maybe some emails and V-mails. We'll do all of it with the help of this guy, longest-running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's a handsome young stranger. He wasn't the class podcaster, but he sat next to him, and he studied him.
Ooh.
He's Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. Sorry about the rain, but it's not like it's not negative 8, though. You would take negative 8 in
negative
a sunny sky, wouldn't you?
Oh. 100%. That just gets to my particular, like, the wiring in my brain, I guess, is if I were looking out this window across Lake Whatcom and over at Squalicum Mountain, which I can't see, it's obscured by rain clouds, were I looking out on this scene and it were negative 8 outside but just clear blue sky, I wouldn't have a care in the world. But this just this wet kind of just moldering sad weather pattern, which it's not that it's, if this was just today, that'd be fine, but it's that when you look at the weather app, it's just continuous. I feel like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day when he starts to really lose it at the end and he just says, like, it's cold, it's always cold, when he's doing the weather forecast. Mm-hmm. I'm slipping into that mental state, but I'm also trying to pull out of it. I want to tell the listeners good news. This show today for you and I, Andrew, is going to be digression free. It's going to be laser focused. It's going to be a beautiful, sweet smelling show. And the reason I know that is because you and I just did a 1 hour show for each other's benefit, a non-recorded show with each other, talking about all of the digressions involving sports radio, this, that, and the other that you and I are interested in. We got that show out of our system, and now we're doing the real show, and that means all that's left is good, interesting content for the listeners.
Okay, I'm gonna. First of all, I didn't even realize that we went on for an hour. We really did.
We did an hour. You and I just talking as friends before the show started, and did what was essentially an episode of TBTL, but again, very, 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 very specific to our interests.
Now, don't get nervous. I won't. You know, I won't say anything here that was just meant for your ears or my ears, but I would like, let me see, can we track how our conversation began without derailing this too much? So it all began with, I have a piece of tape that we haven't played as intro tape yet that I'm excited about, but it does mention a gun in it. It's not a particularly violent piece of tape, but I told you I'm not going to start with that today because there is more gun violence in the news, which, by the way, as you pointed out the other day, when won't there be? Like, maybe I'll never use this tape, but it just seemed like a bad day to use it. So that is, there was a shooting. There were actually a couple of shootings in Seattle yesterday. So it started with me saying, I'm not going to use that tape. And then me saying, yeah, are you up to speed on this story about the shooting? And then that turned into me complaining about a local TV station and their coverage of it as it was breaking last night, which then led, I think, to me saying I then checked out various local radio stations, and then that got us talking about our old radio station, Cairo Radio, and some of the programming changes that seem to be going on over there, which then led to a conversation, I believe, about 710, the sports station, and what we think is working over there, which then led, I think, to a conversation about me finally getting into the Dan Le Batard show, which you've been telling me to listen to for about 2 years now, and suddenly it clicked with me this week, and now I'm like quasi obsessed. We probably talked about Le Batard alone for 20 minutes, do you think?
Yes.
If you're talking
a
about
tight, we have a tight 30 on Le Batard.
Which was weird because it was like, it used to be you telling me all these details of a show that I had never heard before, but now that I am like very excited about the show too, that I'm basically reliving entire Le Batard segments that I've heard on the radio the past couple of days to you, and of course getting every detail right, no doubt.
Yes.
And then I think, is that it? Then we came back to maybe some more Cairo speculation,
some
and
local,
here we are.
Local radio talk, and then here we are. Andrew, that is fascinating to me. You have total recall on what
that's what everybody always says about me.
I'll mention one other thing.
That's what Nicole Kidman always says about me. I have total recall.
I'll mention one other thing. because you give yourself a really hard time on the show about not remembering things sometimes or names. But man, for specific things, your brain is a friggin' steel trap. When we were done with all of that, that fascinating content that will never make it to the internet because we weren't recording it, we then did the thing where we kind of get our audio drop levels worked out. And so I have this new system, which is sort of good. If anybody wants to put some pressure on Rogue Amoeba software systems, ask them to make Farrago the system, make it searchable. That would be great. If we could start a campaign, I think we could really, maybe move the needle on this. Anyway, I got this new software system for playing audio. It's pretty good, but one of the things that's cool about it is I can adjust the levels of individual audio drops, and they will stay at that level until I change them. This was something I couldn't really do easily in Apple Music or iTunes or whatever it was called by the time it stopped being useful to me. And we're going through all these different drops, and you just remembered instinctively, because I played this one drop for you, it was too quiet, and I was like, well, okay, I got to fix this. You go, well, you turned it down yesterday. You knew which of these like 20 drops, you could remember which ones had been tweaked in which direction, which is, that's like a weird... That's like, some Rain Man, you just dropped a bunch of matchsticks on the ground and you counted them all kind of shit.
It was just the one drop because it's the same drop that you play every day. So it's kind of our, I don't know, what's the right word? I keep on stumbling over this. It's our control
cornerstone.
Group, our cornerstone, yeah. Our standard bear.
Let the fun begin.
Yeah, it was
it's
the Tom Chain.
Drop, by the way.
So that drop, and let's just explain this a little bit more. When we're talking about the levels, you can now control the levels on each one of those drops, which is good because your drops are all over the place. Not like mine. My library's pretty uniform. But you can only turn them down. You can't turn them up. I've never even seen your software, but I can sort of picture it. But knowing that all of your drops start turned all the way up, but then if one of them is too quiet, it means you got to turn all the other ones down. And so Tom Chain is kind of in the middle there, and that's kind of our control group. So I'd remembered turning Tom Chain down yesterday. So I don't know. I think
the irony of where I took this conversation is that the drop we're referencing, this one...
Let the fun begin.
Couldn't less accurately describe where I took that conversation.
No, that is true, and I really doubled down on it. My apology.
No, that was on me. I guided us into the least fun part of that conversation.
So anyway, when the Stugat says no...
Oh my gosh. We were, of course, last week we were in Minnesota having our big meetings, and it's so funny because we're kicking around all kinds of different ideas on ways to grow the TBTL audience. And I think it's okay to say this. One of the ideas is maybe for us to spin a show off of TBTL. We, of course, have the No Point Conversion, Song of Ice and Spoilers, which I guess that's been retired now. But we also have Macmillan Men, which will be coming soon to a podcast feed near you. We're actually going to be recording the first episode of season two today. It's a bit unclear still when it will hit the airwaves, but just look for that. But one of the ideas was maybe we do another podcast that's about something that's already really popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like
a TV show that's a recap show that's very much in the zeitgeist of the show itself, because then maybe some people who don't know what TBTL is, they are maybe fans of a particular TV show, and they'll be like, oh, what's this podcast about that? The idea being that we'd be the small fish that's swimming behind some giant whale, and we'd catch a little krill when it fell out of the whale's mouth. Well, anyway, one of the other ideas I had, which is hilarious, was maybe we could just do a spinoff podcast about someone else's podcast.
Now we know what it is. It's the Lebatard Show.
Lebatard. I mean, probably we could become the number one Lebatard fan cast, and I assume that show just kicks off enough it would kick off enough listeners that would want to hear one more hour a week about that show.
Yeah.
That maybe we'd get. I mean, it's funny considering we're on episode 3082 in a collector series. I would argue that we are probably. I wonder where we rank in terms of podcasts that have done the most episodes. I would have to say, I bet you we're pretty close to the top. Because when we started doing this as a radio show, it was still a podcast. So maybe you could say that's sort of slightly cheating. But we got into this when there were not that many podcasts. And we have now for over 11 years done five shows a week. I mean, there's no way that anyone in the last 11 years, unless they were doing 7 shows a week, could be doing more episodes than us, right?
I am looking this up. Pesca and I were... Oh, it's funny. You know what? I never... He gave us a shout-out on some show recently and said that... that we have more episodes than anybody else. And I texted him about that. And he said, does anyone have more episodes? Keith and the Girl Show might have more. And so I looked that up. And I'm just noticing now that I responded to him. This was in August of this year. And my phone says that my text was never sent. I can tap to try again. Should I respond? Do you think he'll know what I'm talking about if I just resend this text from August 9th that says, yeah, it looks like they got a couple hundred on us? Do you think you'd like to get that in the middle of a Wednesday?
Let's play a game. Would you like to play a game? Yeah, just hit retap that and then just see what his response is.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that's a good – I don't know that Keith and the Girl Show. I haven't heard it much, but I know that it's popular and I know it's been around a long time. But I and I guess maybe – predates us by a little bit, but my point in all this is to say it's kind of funny considering we've probably done almost the most number of shows of any podcast in the history of the world in the last 10 years, and now we're finally moving into the phase where we make this podcast about a different podcast where we reach our full potential, which is to be a fan cast of someone else's podcast.
They just have us beat. They have 3,221. And what are we on 3,082 today?
82. Well, that's it, Andrew. We're adding Saturdays and Sundays.
Hey, you know what, though?
By the way, you know what? We're not counting all of our spinoffs.
How many
shows do you think we've done? It's probably not in the hundreds yet. But between Ice and Spoilers, No Points, McMillan Men.
Oh, it's definitely in the hundreds. We've been doing No Points for like – we started that in 2013, right?
So if we were numbering those, I mean, the TBTL verse, I think, probably gets towards 3,200 then.
What was the year that the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl and won it? Like, what football
2013?
Was that early 2013, like the Super Bowl that was the 2012 season? Because it was that
Maybe.
Season,
I don't know.
I think.
Horrible with dates.
So I think it was probably 2012. We've been doing No Point Conversion since 2012. We do, let's say, 16 of those a year. Just say bye weeks and things that we skipped. So that's 9 years of that. Like, yeah, we're definitely in the hundreds when it comes to all of the extra shows.
I'm just marveling that was 8 years ago. That's hard for me to process.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, here we are, episode 3082 in a collector series. We are now officially the Keith and the Girl, the leading Keith and the Girl fan cast. Welcome. This is called Luke and the Guy.
Luke and the Boy.
And, we welcome all of the new listeners. Let's do this for once in our 3,082 episodes. Let's go to break on time, and then when we come back, I want to update you on. I went and visited a different workout gym yesterday, Andrew, and I want to give you an update on that, and then. We do have some interesting top stories related to music, and we want to do those and Blur's Day. So stick with us. This is TBTL. Back in just a moment. Haven't heard this song in a long time.
The reason I'm playing it is because you went to a weight gym. I was trying to think of songs with weight in it.
Ooh, and it is the hardest part.
It is the hardest part.
It is definitely the hardest part.
Ooh.
No question.
I did something. What did I do yesterday or the day before when it was like something about heavy? and we went on a whole tangent. Do you remember what we bumped back with? Why am I doing this today? Why am I taking the show in a terrible direction?
I think you're getting cocky because I've been complimenting your memory for a lot of the early part of today's show.
I think that's maybe it. Okay, I'll figure it out later. But I'll say I'm not nailing it with the tie-ins to weightlifting and
heaviness. This is good. No, that's good. I like this. And any chance to throw some petty down, I am in full support of. Yeah, so I always wonder how much I need to like recap things because I feel like most of the audience that's listening to us probably heard. Actually, maybe not. I don't know. Some surprising data last week when we were in Minnesota. I assume that our audience is small but loyal and that everyone listens to every episode every day and week. But we have a larger audience than I thought who is less regular about the listening. So maybe some people did miss this. I'm trying to self-improve. I mean, I'm always trying to do that, but I'm trying to actually really do it this time. I've been kind of like, I've just been slipping a little bit in terms of like my diet for about, I'd say, 2 years. So maybe that's just my new lifestyle. But I haven't been eating great. I've been kind of a little heavier than I want to be. So I'm trying to kind of get that under control, and I've decided that part of it is I need to integrate a certain amount of weight training into my exercise. But I don't know how to do any of that stuff because the last time I did it seriously was in, like, high school, and everything has changed since then. So on Monday, I went to this one, like, weight gym here in town, which was a kind of an odd experience. I was not 100% vibing with the trainer. It was in this kind of like industrial park in this just tiny little almost like storage unit. And I'm in such a place with this idea of weight training because I'm not experienced with it that I thought, well, maybe I'm not supposed to like this. Maybe this is supposed to be an experience that leaves me feeling kind of bad. Even the intake experience when the trainer was asking me like, do you put too much salad dressing on things? Which is like, yeah, look at my body. Of course I do. You think I got this body from putting not enough salad dressing on things?
Wait, are you asking me if I put too much salad dressing on my donuts? Because I think I put the perfect amount of salad dressing on my donuts.
And also, by the way, that's donut dressing. That's a totally different thing. So, yeah, I had actually scheduled a couple more sessions at this other place and was like, then sort of thought, wait, why? No, I don't need to, like, there are other options. I don't need to go bang my head against this wall, which probably was like day two of the training. Well, here's the part where you bang your head into the wall. Okay. So I went looking for other places, found another place that seemed a little more my speed. And I told you, Andrew, that it's also in what I'm calling the self-improvement district of Bellingham. It's also in these kind of big, like, aluminum, like corrugated aluminum buildings are probably steel actually. It's like there's an AA meeting there. There's a bunch of hot yoga. There's like karate gyms. There's like all these different places that are all in this kind of industrial park that are like how you kind of make yourself maybe a better human. But I said that there were these big tires that were out in front of this place. And I was like, that's intimidating. Well, I went yesterday for a session there. I mean, just to like a meeting to just talk with the folks about what I was hoping to do. And I knock on the door and I'm like, man, they're keeping it legit. There's like a dumpster back here. There's just this one banner. There's these big old tires. And no one answers the door. And I'm like, really, guys? And then finally someone comes and opens the door and they're like, oh, hi, you're Luke, right? And I go, yeah. They go, oh, this is the back door. So the front door of this gym is a totally normal, legit thing. It's like glass and they have a lobby and it's like actually nice. But that's how kind of like in my head I am about this stuff. I'm like, well, maybe these are all like speakeasies. Like they're actively trying to make them as unwelcoming as possible. But no, this is a whole different vibe. It's actually like nice, normal, run by these really nice people. And I had a really nice chat with them and talked about my goals, and so I'm going to start in with that on Saturday. I have my first session. I'm going to actually be kind of working with a personal trainer for a while, which is something I've never done, mostly because I'm embarrassed about it and also because worried about the cost. All this isn't like cost prohibitive to do it, but I was like, how much stuff do I waste money on that is not good for me? How about I waste some money on something that might be potentially good for me? So I'm going to try this for a few weeks and see how it goes, and I'll keep everybody posted. I'm also excited because maybe inspired by this thing I'm signed up for. And by the way, what I'm going to be doing is kind of weight training. I don't even know what that looks like, Andrew. It's going to be 50 minutes. There's going to be a trainer there, and I think it's going to be hard, but I'm going to just try and do it. But it's going to be way out of my comfort zone.
I just thought of a story that I want to tell you, and I'm wondering if it's okay. Not appropriate for me to tell you on the podcast. Ooh. Let me put it this way. I want to be somewhat careful because there's a chance she would hear this. I think it's a very small chance, but you just talking about working out, I was going to say something about your glutes.
Is it about Phyllis? Because she's going to hear it.
No, it's not about Phyllis. I did all my Phyllis S talking to you before the show. That was the other tangent we went on. And another thing about her. Whoa, she's got to be so nice all the time and kind and giving. Anyway, sorry, Phyllis. That was disgusting noises I just made. I was
leaving some space in case you wanted to edit it out.
I was making some. I stand by that. That was my imitation of me when I'm disgusted by somebody for being too nice to me. I was going to make a joke about your glutes because back in high school, I had a friend who, if he was making fun of jocks, he would say, "Oh, come on, man, feel my glutes." And I always thought that was funny. I think I didn't realize that that was the butt region, maybe in high school when he was, that was the whole joke, I guess. Right. Some point, I think he had to explain it to
me. The kind of homoeroticism of this thing that we identify as being hypermasculine.
Right. So that was the joke. None of that matters. What that reminded me of was that my dental hygienist yesterday was talking about glutes, and I doubt she would hear this.
I wonder
this.
How that comes up during the cleaning.
Well, it wasn't the weirdest part. I would say a weirder part was when she offered to let me smell her armpit.
What is the name of this dentist, and do they take our insurance? Because I am there. This sounds like an adventure. And I say this as a person, the dentist that I go to was playing trap music on a Sonos last time I was there.
So I go to I'm not going to say the name of it. I've said the name of this dental place before. I love this place. I've been going there for years. And I will even say,
is it also a foot spa?
It's a place.
Has it been recently raided by the Seattle police?
Okay, I'll say the name of it, but don't anybody write them. But it's called Tubbs. It's in the University
Golden
District.
Tooth, dental and foot spa.
No, I love this place. I've been going there for years. My teeth, I had actually gone through a big period of not going to the dentist, and my gums and everything were pretty bad. This is like 10 years ago when I first came to these folks, and they really got everything in order with me. And I actually go to the dentist 4 times a year now just because I don't want to let things slip again. And also I had that kind of that tongue thing, so I like them to keep an eye on things. And, you know, I love this place. I have very strong loyalty to this place. About a year ago, I had a hygienist there who I hadn't worked with before, who hadn't worked on me before. And I'm going to say I've had her maybe
whose armpit you had yet to smell.
Yes. And I had her maybe the 3 of the last 5 times now that I've gone there. So over the course of the past year and a half or so. And she's a very she was very impressed, I think it's safe to say, when she heard that my job was being a podcaster.
Vote for why I should start going to this dentist. I feel like I get zero play
from
my dental hygienist over this very glamorous job I have.
And I can never remember what a hygienist or doctor or physician's assistant can remember about me from one visit to the next, right? But the second time I saw her, she did remember that I was a podcaster and asked me, you know, what we talked about. She was very fascinated by the idea of doing a daily show. And she'll often ask, like, did you do your podcast today? What did you talk about? Yesterday, I was able to say that we talked about Reader's Digest tips for your pets. But I also
know...
Well,
that lowers the chances that she's going to hear this. So that's kind of good, actually.
Yes, exactly. And one thing, though, I think maybe... I don't know. At a previous visit, I also mentioned that I have a podcast about cleaning. And she started talking. She got very, very excited about that. She considers herself a clean freak. I would actually call her a germaphobe, and she calls herself a germaphobe too. Our
scrub
types
jockey?
Isn't that your guys' term of art? She could be a scrub jockey if she starts listening. But, you know, our interest in cleaning are almost polar opposite. I'm like, I like everything to be in its place, and I'm not really that worried about germs. I just don't like seeing things out of place or dirty, whereas she's very focused on germs. Like, she was the one who told me that when she gets on an airplane, she wipes everything down with, like, you know, antiseptic cloths or whatever those are called. Which Naomi Campbell had a video, a viral video going around of her whole routine when she gets on an airplane. So I was talking to her about that. But I came into this one knowing a lot of personal details about her life, including that she had to train her – she's Asian, and she had to train her white boyfriend to take off his shoes in the house. He's from Texas. And also, he's not allowed to wear clothes from the outside. Like, if he has a desk job, it sounds like. He works in an office. But he's not allowed to wear his outside clothes inside. He has to come in and put on his, like, inside clothes that haven't been exposed to the outside. Yes, exactly. I told her about the concept of tonight pants. She was interested in that. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say?
Oh, nothing. It's just, you know, again, this is – we're operating under the kind of odd circumstances where I don't want to say anything that if this person heard it would be offensive. But, I mean, it sounds like you're describing a pretty active case of obsessive-compulsive disorder, right?
Yeah. That's when she talked about it. She said that the doctor sometimes says that she thinks she's OCD. She doesn't think she is. But, again, she's
When you're making someone change their outside clothes to their inside clothes – again, and I don't say this with any judgment. I just think – that seems like it would be pretty hard to classify that as anything other than an obsessive compulsive situation.
Yes. And so anyway, so we're talking about that. And I even said, like, yeah, our concerns are different. I'm a shoes on family. In fact, I've told my friends that I can exercise my right not to go to your party if it's a shoes off party. And she's like, yeah,
you wear your shoes to bed.
I do.
I actually honestly think is weird.
She says that that's why I don't let a lot of white people come into my house. Sure. And she's like, unless you're from the Midwest, you don't know to take your shoes off. I'm like, I am from the Midwest, and I still don't. I did grow up taking my shoes off. I actually think my insistence to leave them on now is a reaction to my youth. But anyway, in all of this conversation, the glute thing is a totally different thing. She's talking about another patient she had today who that was a personal trainer and was trying to convince her to be her personal trainer. And she said, no, I don't want a personal trainer who's going to hold me my feet to the fire. I want somebody I can go out and have drinks with and understands my lifestyle. And I'm thinking I think you're looking for a friend, not a personal trainer, but whatever. She said, and she's like, and then he was in really good shape too. And, you know, he was wearing those really tight pants. I told him he had great glutes, but I wasn't flirting. I'm not a flirt, Andrew. And I'm just like, okay. You know, while she's working on my mouth, I'm like, oh. Anyway.
Oh, I'm glad that was the result of that suction device being in your mouth and not just how you talk at the dentist.
Yes. No, this was in the lobby.
Yeah, right. At what point did the procedure start?
But anyway, so we're talking about all this cleanliness stuff, and then she mentions that she doesn't wear deodorant. She says that she doesn't have to wear deodorant because Asian people are missing a gene, so they don't get BO. I haven't looked that up. I'm dubious. Or at least I'm not saying that there are people out there who don't have to wear deodorant. I don't know if it's a quote-unquote missing gene, and I don't know if it's an Asian thing.
My first wife did not wear deodorant and didn't need to. Did not emit – her sweat did not emit any smell. And she also ran like 10 miles a day. So Lord knows she was like working that system and had no discernible body odor. It was one of the early things she told me. And I'll tell you, it was appealing. But so I've known people that don't make any kind of smell in that department.
Yeah, but she's just she's giving me a lot of information. She's telling me this whole story about how when she met her when she was first dating her husband or not husband, I'm sorry, her boyfriend, he didn't believe her that she didn't smell, so she had him smell her, and it was after a 10-hour day, and he couldn't believe it. She didn't smell, and she said he smells bad. He smells like onions. Like, I know so much about her life. And then at one point she's like, I don't smell. Do you use deodorant, Andrew? I'm like, she uses your name a lot. Do you use deodorant, Andrew? Yeah, I do. Do you need to? Yeah. But again, this is while my teeth are being cleaned. And then she said, I don't need it. I don't need it. You can smell me. Do you want to smell me, Andrew? No, I'm good. Is how that whole conversation went down. So anyway, that's my trip to the dentist.
ScientificAmerican.com. By the way, it is Daniel from the dentist. This is an interesting article about this gene.
I'm wrong?
There appears to be some science behind what she told you. January 17th, Journal of Investigative Dermatology studied this gene that it determines if you have, wet or dry earwax. It's called ABCC11.
Oh, I knew about this.
Interestingly, yep. People who produce the dry version of earwax also lack a chemical in their armpits that bacteria feed on to cause underarm odor. So this particular gene also means your underarms will not smell because there isn't the food for bacteria to come get, creating this smell.
Dude.
The key gene is basically the single determinant of whether you do or do not produce underarm odor, says this doctor. Can I just throw this last bit at you and then you can react? Only 2% of Europeans lack the gene for smelly armpits. In other words, only 2% of Europeans are armpit smell proof. Most East Asians and also almost all Koreans lack this gene, according to this doctor.
So first of all, she was right. When you were out of the office or whatever many years ago now, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I think Genevieve filled in for you. She and I did a TBTL together, and we talked about this earwax thing, about the dry versus wet earwax. And I knew that it was somehow genetic, and often Asians have the, according to the research, have the drier kind. And in the chair yesterday, when she's telling me about her not smelling because of this genetic thing, I almost brought up the earwax thing. But then it occurred to me, wait, why am I bringing this up? Because I didn't know there was a connection. And then it occurred to me, what, am I just trading genetic facts about Asians now? Maybe that's not something I should be doing at the dentist's office. Yet here it is. There is a connection. Because when she was telling me this, I was thinking about the earwax the whole time. Same
yes,
gene.
Your instincts were right. This is the other part that this Scientific American article refers to. They did the study, of course, and they said they're citing a study. Of the 117 non-odor producing women, over three quarters still used deodorant daily, which suggests the majority of women are using a product every day when they have no need to.
She did mention that she felt like there was social pressure when she was a young girl.
That's the gist of this article. Societal norms often dictate the products people use, even if they don't need them. Mm-hmm. This is written by Tia Ghose in January of 2013, a while ago, but I assume that the data is still accurate. So, wow, that was it's official. I'm going to start changing my outfit before I come inside.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly your dental hygienist knows a thing or two about a thing or two.
I can't believe I was so dismissive of, I don't think it's because you're missing a gene. And it's literally, you say missing a gene. So I guess I shouldn't be so dismissive. But I did not, I did not smell anybody's armpit at the dentist yesterday.
So you didn't?
No, I decided to swerve on that, as you would say.
I see. Got it. Okay, yeah. Well, I have to say, though, like if there's a person in my life, like as far as a professional service that I engage with, I don't know how to describe it in a less creepy way. If there's a person whose services I need and I want them to be extra careful on the germ front, somebody who's poking around in my mouth, that's a good combo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and peace and love to this person and whatever they're dealing with as far as if some of this is not voluntary. But man, you know, you're making out like a germ-free bandit over there as the client of the person who is constantly hosing themselves down with Purell.
That's what I was thinking, because she mentioned that some of her patients will say, boy, if you're such a germaphobe, you're in the wrong business. And she says, no, I'm in the right business. Like, I sanitize all the time. I'm changing my gloves twice as much as everybody else. I was also thinking, I think there's something, if there's some sort of OCD thing here, I think actually cleaning teeth, like the idea of scraping away until it's all like perfect, actually would probably be something that appeals to, like, I wouldn't be good with the human aspect of people's mouths, but I understand that idea of like wanting to get something just perfectly clean in there. I think that would feed an OCD thing. She also said, though, that her friends used to make fun of her and said, you can't be a germaphobe because whenever we go out, you're just kissing everybody at the bar. I just know so much about this person who cleans my teeth. Would you...
They sound fascinating.
Would you be uncomfortable if your dental hygienist offered to let you smell her armpits?
Would I be uncomfortable? I would be mildly shocked, but then I would take the opportunity because I would think to myself, when's this going to happen again? Like,
no,
you asked
you
me the
wouldn't.
Other day, actually, when we were talking about the... I absolutely would. The other day, I think it was actually related to that gym conversation, the first gym I went to where it was kind of an odd deal. I think you said, oh, but are you sometimes thinking this will be good content for the show? And my answer was, yeah, that is definitely something that is in the back of my mind as I live my life. There's also this – it's why I ended up at Gaffoyingham instead of seeing the movie Joker on Monday night. My plan was to go see Joker – but then I realized Gaffoyingham was happening, and Gaffoyingham was only happening on a Monday night. That's the stand-up comedy. That's the poorly named stand-up comedy show in Bellingham. Phyllis Fletcher, speaking of, our friend Phyllis Fletcher, had way better ideas.
So much better.
For what we should call that. Let's just give her a shout-out real quick, see if I can find this on the fly. She proposed Bellinghaha,
mm-hmm.
which is good. Or, and this is the real winner,
this is
I
amazing.
Think, Belly Laughs.
B-E-L-L-I Laughs. That's so good.
I mean, that's great. So much better than Gaffoyingham. But anyway, I'm going somewhere with this. The way my brain works is, what is a limited opportunity and what is an opportunity that presents itself regularly? So on Monday night, I was like, well, Joker is playing the rest of this week at the local theater, so I can go see it. I have... five other times I can go see it. Gaffoyingham is only happening tonight. That was how I decided to go to the stand-up comedy show. Similarly, if the dental hygienist says, do you want to smell my armpit? I think to myself, this is a limited time offer. This is never going to probably happen again. And when presented with something that is a limited time offer, I almost always take it because that's just how I live. I live Moss, Andrew.
But I mean, there's all kinds of disgusting things somebody could offer you to do once in a lifetime, but you're not going to do it.
Well, it depends on the thing. As I've always said, I'll try anything twice.
well, anyway, I did her up on her offer to smell her armpit.
I think I would have just out of the pure novelty of the whole thing. I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying, and I just want to be clear. I don't know why this matters. It would not be – that's not something that is a particularly – that's not an erotic thing for me. Like that's not – imagine if it was. Boy, man, you go your whole life. You're like your kink is dental hygienist letting you smell their armpit. And then it happens. You must just be like, boy, did my ship come in. But it's not a thing that's not particularly appealing to me on any erotic level. But I just think let me clarify that statement and let me take this to a slightly possibly weirder place. If it was a male dental hygienist, I would be less likely to do it. Mm-hmm. So there is got to be some kind of gendered thing. Not that it would be about me wanting to creep on the person, but I do find women just as a sort of default setting markedly less gross than dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a whole variety of things. I mean, I said that like I'm also not hitting on my therapist, but I've always had female therapists. There's something about, like, I'm 100% less grossed out by girls than boys when it comes to the physical stuff.
Yeah. I mean, but it goes beyond that, too, though, because with a therapist, it's not about being grossed out, right? It's just like,
just
have
well, that's like a mental thing. Yeah. This is a physical thing where if a male hygienist said, smell my armpit, I might still do it on the same principle, but it would be more like, I'd be a little more hesitant than if a female hygienist said, smell my armpit. I'd be like, yeah, okay, well, how bad can it be?
Right.
I'm just less grossed out by the female form than I am by the male form.
I'll bet you would smell Kamara Kev's armpit.
Many times.
I'm going to make a list of all the guys whose armpits I think you would smell. And then tomorrow on the show, I will share that list with you, and you can tell me if I'm right
that's
or wrong.
That's great. Honestly, that's less work for me to do, getting tomorrow's show sheet together.
Stu Gotts is on the list.
Love it. Onion smell.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
This is such a crazy story to me. I believe our friend the StuBot was somehow in my following of our friend the StuBot on Twitter. I saw reference to this. I can't remember if he was tweeting about it or if he was responding to someone else who had tweeted about it. As it happened, This is in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, even though I don't think very much about the story revolves around the Twin Cities. But this was an article written by a person named John Bream. Judge denies founding drummer's right to play with Aerosmith at the Grammys. A Massachusetts judge has denied founding Aerosmith drummer Joey Kramer a chance to perform with the Rock Hall of Fame band. By the way, I guess what context do we need that? Like, I know, and peace and love to Andrew, to the Clevelanders in the audience, but like, I think that's an unnecessarily wordy way to set up Aerosmith, the Rock Hall of Fame band, because this is not an event at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is something related to the Grammys. Basically, a judge has said to this guy, Joey Kramer, you do not legally have the right to play drums in Aerosmith at the Grammys.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame thing, it's like you hear it in sports sometimes, right? Like Hall of Famer, like, and then Hall of Famer Luke Burbank. It trips off the tongue, but
yeah,
like,
obviously,
you don't have that. By the way, congratulations, such an honor.
I don't like to belabor the awards I get. So on this show, I kind of low-keyed that one.
But anyway, I agree. It doesn't matter. Like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame doesn't matter either. But
That's the thing, the Rock Hall. Like, again, peace and love to John Bream, probably a nice guy. And the next article, if we have time, that I'm going to get to is also by this same dude. And it's, I think, a really good article. So that threw me a bit. Okay, so here's apparently what happened. This guy, Joey Kramer, was recently injured. It's a bit unclear because at one point in this article, there's a mention of a shoulder injury. And another point, Joey Kramer, mentions an ankle injury. Those both come into play as a drummer, of course. But he was forced recently to, quote, audition for his job of 50 years. And he apparently failed. So Aerosmith is going to be using a temporary replacement for these couple of Grammy events. I don't know if they're actually playing on the Grammys, like on TV, or if it's some sort of ancillary event. But anyway, it's a big enough deal to the band that they're all going out there to LA to do this. And this guy, Joey Kramer, wants to play with the band. And they are like, yeah, no, actually. And so then he goes to court to try to get a judge to allow him to play with the band.
And no can do.
No can do, but here's the part that's really weird about it. I can't figure out what's going on sort of interpersonally with him and the band, because the band released a statement that said, Joey Kramer is our brother. His well-being is of paramount importance to us. However, he has not been emotionally and physically able to perform with the band by his own admission for the last 6 months. We have missed him and have encouraged him to rejoin us to play many times, but apparently he has not felt ready to do so. We are bonded together by much more than our time on stage. That's the that's the release from Aerosmith about the guy that they're legally not letting into the band for these performances.
So it must be what are you assuming here?
My guess is that there's something going on with him, whether mental health related or other, you know, substance abuse, where they don't think he's up to it. But what's weird is that they keep asking him to come and play with them also. It's not like it does not appear to be just a sort of cut and dried thing where they're saying to him, hey, bro, you can't really come back and play until you've got your stuff together. This is a quote from a Kramer's statement, the drummer. I'm extremely disappointed by the judge's ruling, but I respect it. I knew filing a lawsuit was a bit of an uphill battle, considering blah, blah, blah. I'm also, because I don't think that's really something courts tend to handle. That's me interjecting there. The band, he says, the band waited until January 15th to tell me they weren't letting me play at the awards ceremonies this week. I can hold my head high knowing I did the right thing. The truth speaks for itself. Ever since I injured my foot last August and went through many hours of physical therapy, not once did the band in its entirety offer to rehearse with me. That is a fact. I was also sent the full rehearsal schedule on January 18th and flew to LA the next day to rehearse and have many texts and emails stating the band can't wait for my return. When I showed up to rehearse, I was greeted by two security guards who prohibited me from entering.
What the heck is going on? What the heck, fire?
One more deet. When Kramer injured his shoulder last year, so that's, again, I think different than the ankle injury, his drum tech filled in for a few gigs during Aerosmith's residency in Las Vegas. Kramer did, however, perform in the Twin Cities in July this summer at Summer Jam in Shakopee.
Oh, see, that's why you never pass up a Summer Jam in Shakopee.
That's right. So he did get to play with them at Summer Jam in Shakopee. Also, by the way, greatest friggin' two nights of that drum tech's life.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. Like, can you? I mean, you always know that about all of those dudes, the guitar techs and the drum techs. Like, if you're sitting at a show and you're watching, like, the guitar, if it's a big show, if it's a band where, like, you know, the guitar player has, like, multiple guitars that are all in different tuning, and that guy that comes out and he's, like, tuning the guitars, but they're plugged in so you can hear it, and then he's checking the mics, you're always like, that guy can probably also wail on guitar, but as it happens, he's the drum or he's the guitar tech.
It's like the equivalent of like if I get sick and so you put in Corey Schreppel or Eric the Viking Stromstedt or one of our engineers.
Yes. Somebody who's just been kind of waiting for their moment, like that drum tech to get the call that we like, just the fact that he knew that like the time signature or what, I don't know drum terminology, but the fact that he probably already knew all the Aerosmith songs from just standing off stage at 100 Aerosmith shows, and then they're just like, get in, Mike. It's your shot. I mean, that must have just been incredible for him.
Well, what if Mike is the one who's creating all this drama behind the scenes? I wonder if he's spreading a bunch of lies and like playing all the Aerosmith guys off of each other and creating, you know, discord so that he can get another shot at it.
It's very possible. I mean, we can't. I'd say it's the likely scenario as of right now. Again, the reason that I'm fascinated by this is just that it's the statements are confusing to me.
Yes,
because you sort of have the drummer saying that they kept inviting him back and then all of a sudden we're like, no. But you have Aerosmith, the rest of the band, saying we love him and we want him back, but he has not been ready. He's been uninterested in coming back. So it's sort of, I don't know. It seems like there are kind of conflicting narratives here. But again, my guess would be it has something to do with some kind of mental health thing. Also, if they do eventually let him back in the band after he sued them to play in the band, that would be interesting. Like, can you imagine if this would have worked? If a judge would have said, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, et al., you are hereby legally required to let Joey back into the band for these performances. Would that have been an awkward show?
Yeah, this'll be really good. Hey, you want to jam? You want to get our creative juices flowing? That's another thing I take from this, which is, I mean, this is really obvious. I know that bands, no matter how long they've been together, have rehearsals and, of course, have, I'm sure, what the kids call jam sessions or, you know, some sort of creative session, and they have to come up with
new material. I'm ready to smoke the rubble to rock and
roll. But, like, it is funny to think about Aerosmith rehearsing, sort of, because you think of and this isn't a shot at them, but they're just such an established band, right? Like, I could see, hey, we have this gig coming up, we have to practice these things. But if you also just sort of picture, like, I don't know, just like an average Wednesday, well, I gotta go to band rehearsal, bye mom, I gotta take my guitar, only like you're 72 years old and you've been doing this for, you know, 50 years.
The first hour of any Aerosmith rehearsal is Steven Tyler tying scarves to the mic stand.
Yes.
That's so you build that in. You basically go like, okay, we're here for 3 hours, but really nobody has to get there till about 10 minutes before the second hour starts because of Tyler and the scarf tying.
By the way, I was only off by 1 year. Steven Tyler, 71. I said 72.
He is, in my mind, a weird-looking dude, but you got to give him credit because in a bizarre way, he does not really look 72.
No, he
either looks like he's 22 or 172.
I can't figure out
what Steven Tyler looks like, but it's somehow not 72.
He's always looked 72. Maybe that's what it is. Like, I was talking
You've always been 72, Mr. Tyler.
I was talking about this with Genevieve about Larry David this weekend because they were showing a marathon. Yeah, and it's funny how Larry David, he doesn't look young now, but he doesn't look like he's aging. Now, the flip side of that is because he looked super old when he was young.
Yeah.
But he also looks like he was old when he was young, but then he never changed. And now Larry David just always looks like Larry David.
That's the upside of going bald whenever it was he went bald and of just being that kind of weirdly old appearing.
Yeah.
Is we've all gotten used to it. When Clooney is old, it's going to really rock our world because were not ready for that. But yeah, Larry David was ahead of the curve on that. Hey, speaking of music articles out of the Star Tribune, there's another piece by John Bream, and it was just one of those things where you're looking at – I'm looking at the Aerosmith story, and then I'm scrolling down, and then it's suggesting other things that are in the same kind of universe. How short is too short for a concert? Twin Cities fans and promoters weigh in. This was an interesting story about how Cardi B only played for 50 minutes when she came through the Target Center. ZZ Top exited the Minnesota State Fair grandstand after just 63 minutes. By the way, I think this is – oh, my God. This is funny. It's clear that John Bream is obsessed with the Rock Hall of Fame, Andrew.
Oh.
Let me just read from the second graph of this article. ZZ Top exited the Minnesota State Fair grandstand after just 63 minutes. Does their Rock Hall of Fame career still have legs after 50 years of touring? Dude does not miss a chance to reference if someone's in the Rock Hall.
It's a high honor.
Minneapolis music hero Alexander O'Neill performed for a mere 45 minutes at the Dakota last month. How long should a concert headline set last? That was the question pondered by Twin Cities music pop music lovers who witnessed several shortish efforts in recent months. Apparently, there's been a spate of these kind of these short concerts, Andrew, where people come through and they just don't play for long enough. He goes on to interview a bunch of people and their various opinions on the matter, including a guy named Kyle Madison of Eagan. Now, this is interesting. Avid concert goer Kyle Madison of Eagan, Minnesota, attends more than 125 shows a year. 125. He's going to two shows a week.
Jeez Louise.
Sometimes three. That is wild to me. Also, I don't know how close is Eagan to the Twin Cities? Is that a hike? Like, is he driving in from the exurbs on that? Like, that is, and he says, if I'm paying upwards of $100 and a band plays less than 90 minutes, I'm disappointed. It's like, yeah, man, if I drove in from Eagan for my third show of the week and paid over $100, I'd probably want to see them play for a while, too.
Yeah.
Are you looking up Eagan?
No.
What's happening?
Nothing. I'm trying to think about how I want to express.
Does your dental hygienist go to three concerts a week, too?
Yes. I guess my question is, and it's just a really dumb question, is how much of going to the show, how much of the enjoyment of that is actually the time spent watching the headliner play? I mean, the obvious answer is, yeah, that's why we're all here. But I also feel like in my life, now, I'm hesitating because I'm somebody who doesn't leave the house that much. I'm definitely starting to act my age. I was kind of acting like an old man when I was young, socially. I didn't look like Larry David, sure, but I definitely, you know, didn't like going out and stuff that much, even in my 20s and 30s. Now I'm in my 40s. The idea of going to a show and, like, waiting 45 minutes between sets, like, while they get the next band ready, like, that's what's a killer for me. But I also wonder, and I was hesitating because this is just the dumbest, most, I feel like, knuckle-draggy thing to say, especially to the music lovers who are listening right now. But, like, I wonder how much of the motivation is just so that you can remember the experience and it doesn't matter whether or not it was a half hour or 90 minutes. Now, a half hour would be really short, but,
yeah,
like, do you, if it's a 1 hour long set, like, are you kind of like, I got ripped off? Or is it kind of like, no, I got to see Counting Crows and it was this experience and I can tell everybody? I guess those are the words I'm avoiding saying, is like, how much of it is just
right,
so you can say you had the experience, which is really taking the piss out of the fun of going to concerts for a lot of people. But I do think sometimes the motivation is because, well, this could be my only time to see Anderson .Paak or whatever, so I got to do it. I got to be in the same room with him. Do you really care whether or not it was 60 minutes or 90 minutes?
I think that it probably for people depends on the musical act.
Yeah.
Like, I can promise you this. If I go to a Counting Crows show, it's not so I can brag about it later at all. I try to enter every Counting Crows show, if possible, through an unmarked back door. Going to Counting Crows show is like going to that back room at the video store where it's like the beaded curtain. Like, oh, what's back here? Oh, Long November. Okay. Oh. Or Long December. Boy, that's the only thing worse than knowing Counting Crows songs is messing up the names of Counting Crows songs if you profess to be a fan. But I think it probably depends on the – I mean, the takeaway from this article is basically the length of the show doesn't matter unless it's aggressively short, unless it's like 20 minutes. The length of the show matters less than how satisfied people feel leaving the show. And I would guess that that has to do really with the band playing its hits. Mm-hmm. I think if a band comes out and plays for 55 minutes, but they just play the songs that people know and love, people will leave feeling satisfied. I think if a band comes out and doesn't want to play the songs that people know, which on a certain level I think I understand, but I also feel like, I mean, I don't know. I think if I were in a band and I had hit songs, I would play the hit songs because my need for approbation is so sort of bottomless that I would just want the audience to be happy when the show was over. Mm-hmm. And then I would just dance monkey for them because then they'd be happy. So in other words, the takeaway from the article seems to be it is not so much about how long the show is. And also, by the way, sometimes if a show is long and the audience is not feeling it, the show can be too long and you're kind of like, ugh, we didn't need all of this. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, that I had never thought about until I read this article, and he really kind of delves into this, is the question of how much material these bands have. Like, he was breaking it down along the lines of, like, artists who only have one record. So he talks to this artist, Maren Morris. She is a really kind of ascending singer. She has that song that she's, like, it's that Why Don't You Just Meet Me in the Middle song, which is, like, very popular on pop radio. And then she's also, I want to say she might be in the that new kind of super group with Brandi Carlile and Amanda Shires. That's the Highway Women.
Hmm.
Although I'm doing that from memory. I could be wrong. Anyway, Maren Morris says, you do want to give people a full show for their money's worth. I was doing headline shows off of one record, which is a stretch. It has to be at least 90 minutes if you're headlining in a good-sized venue. So Maren Morris is of the opinion that you got to go 90 minutes if people are coming out to a big place to see you, which is an interesting concept. And also, I'd never thought about the fact that if you don't have enough songs, it's hard to fill 90 minutes.
You are absolutely right about Maren Morris, Brandi Carlile, and Amanda Shires making up Nashville's Highway Women. Good job. I had
Thank
no
you.
Idea what you were talking about. Never heard of Maren Morris. Never heard of the Highway Women. Didn't know about that song you were describing. But congratulations. You nailed it.
If I played that Why Don't You Just Meet Me in the Middle song, can you Google the song The Middle?
Yeah, but I'll bet you I don't know. Do they play it on Kixie?
They will in 40 years.
Uh-huh. See, you got to wait for
it. This is going to sound like I'm being critical of Maren Morris, and I'm not, but I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but this is one of those songs. Actually, you know what? I think I was talking to Camaro Kev about it, because Camaro Kev works in radio, and the station he works at is associated with Star 101.5, and he and I were talking about actually how kind of challenging it is as the, like, if you're the music programmer for a pop music station, because every time you put on a new song, people tune out until they know the new song. So until it becomes an old song that they recognize. Like, what people want to hear on the radio is songs that they recognize. Well, at some point, there has to be new songs that get injected into the mix. But when you do that, you're risking driving people away. So you have to be very, very, very careful about how you do it. This is part of why it's so hard for songs to break on major radio, because you're really rolling the dice as the program director or as the music director of that station. And I think he and I were saying, like, this song, The Middle, is just, it's, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's interesting to me that it took off, because it feels like a fairly down the, well, it feels like it's down the middle as a song. Did you locate it yet?
Yeah, I did. And I wanted to say, so it's interesting. It's got three artists credited to it: Zed,
right,
Maren Morris, and Gray. And so Zed is a Russian-German record producer. Maren Morris is Maren Morris, you know, of the Highway Women. We just talked about it, guys.
Of course.
And then the musical duo Gray. So that's who. I was just wanted to make sure
that
I had
probably
the right
songwriting
song
credits.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure that they probably, that's probably a song was written in Nashville, and those other folks are probably, like, you know,
well,
professional songwriters.
Yeah, or maybe they do. I assume if they're credited as an artist here, so my guess is that they maybe do backups or whatever. Let's take a listen to this.
Take a seat right over there, sat on the stairs, stay or leave.
The cabinets are bare, and I'm unaware of just the metronome in the background, or is she turning left?
I know we your blinkers on, Maren. So pull me closer. Why don't you pull me close? Why don't you come on over? I can't just let you go. Oh, baby. Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle? Have you ever heard this song before?
No, but this is...
Wow.
This is amazing. So this is clearly like Zed. This is Zed's project, right? And
I'd heard Zed's dead.
I know. This song was recorded by Demi Lovato, Camila Cabello. Tell
wow.
me if I'm pronouncing these wrong.
Yeah,
we're just getting started.
You're two for two.
Anne Marie, Carly Rae Jepsen, Tove Lo. I know we've played
wow.
a lot of Tove Lo on the
song
show.
Song of the Summer.
Yeah.
Song of the Summer.
Bishop
competitor.
Briggs, Bebe Rexha, Lauren. I can't pronounce that last name. Daya, Charlie XCX, and Ellie
what?
King. Is it pronounced Ellie or L? Another Song of the Summer person.
L King.
L King, before Morris
Rob Schneider's
was
daughter.
Before Morris was finally chosen for the final version. So they had all, I mean, even I recognize like five of those names.
That's amazing. What a weird thing. I mean, the life cycle or the life experience of this song. That's crazy. All of those artists recorded it.
It's also somewhat, and I am not somebody to get on my high horse with music at all, because I don't have a leg to stand on. But
which is why it's so hard for you to get on that high horse.
I know. I gotta hop in, then the horse
involved.
The horse is missing a leg too, because I don't know.
Yeah.
Level playing field, all
I
that.
I saw a three-legged dog at the dog park the other day, and I was trying to not patronize it. It's funny because I'm not even kidding you.
We always patronize
I saw
all
this
dogs.
I know, that's the thing. And yet, where my brain went was, don't treat this dog differently because it has three legs. Like, I was in a mental space with this dog that I would hopefully be with a human person who was dealing with any sort of difference or disability, which would be to not assume that they need my help or extra attention from me unless they indicate that they would like that. I literally had that thought about the dog.
Yeah, right. Like, don't... And then you end up negging the dog because you're trying to
maybe
be so
a little
cool
bit.
Around it. Yeah.
I really went there with my brain. Anyway, keep going. I'm sorry.
So me and my horse with three legs, which is another song by Lobo, I think.
Yeah.
Been
through the desert on a horse with three legs.
This list, I mean, it's a little bit depressing because... And again, people like what they like. I have nothing against pop music. It doesn't really matter to me. But this really underscores the idea of there is a specific...
The pop industrial complex.
Yes, there is a specific sound. We will crank it out. We will have these German-Russian producers come up with the sound. And then we will just like... And this isn't necessarily new. I feel like it's kind of amplified I don't know. Maybe we think more about it these days. There's for a long time you'd have people. What was is it Switzerland that had like all these producers that knew? I don't think it's Switzerland, but it's a country in Northern Europe that was famous for creating pop songs, not just in the 2000s, but going back to like where's ABBA from? Are they Swedish?
They are from Sweden.
So I think you had the Swedish pop sensibility going back to the 70s, where obviously you had songwriters, and then you know. Burt Bacharach would write a bunch of songs and probably have different people sing them, and then it would be a hit with somebody. So I'm not trying to make it sound like every pop song has to start with like one person with a dream and a voice. You know, like that's how it works. But I do think that there was a really interesting visual piece in the, I believe, New York Times about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, that showed you using data points and then turning those data points into data visualizations exactly how music is getting less dynamic as far as what the sound is, as far as what sounds different, that all of pop music is sounding more and more and more. There's less outliers on the radio.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm explaining that well. This article did an amazing job of visualizing it. It's just a little depressing, I think.
Right.
But if you like this song, I don't want to be like, oh, you don't have a soul. Like, you should like the song. That's fine. But we should have more room, I think, for people doing weird stuff.
Well, it's just the natural – I think it's just the sort of natural progression of – the sort of streamlining of this process, which is people like to hear songs that they've heard before, and they're just getting more and more efficient at it. They're just like figuring out how to dial in all the efficiencies mm-hmm. on delivering the maximum amount of the product to the listeners. I will say this. When we were in Minnesota and I was taking an Uber somewhere, the guy was just playing like the local pop radio, and I actually found it very comforting. And mm-hmm. I didn't recognize every song, but I recognized enough of them just from being in the world. That's why I thought maybe you would have heard of the Maren Morris song, because if you had just like walked, you know, through a Target or something in the last 6 months, you probably would have heard that song because it's just so kind of ubiquitous.
I probably have, and just – I mean, it's also – it really does sound backgroundy to me. Like, it just doesn't catch my ear
yeah.
much.
But I kind of was having this moment of like, maybe I should just start listening to like – I mean, you know, I have satellite radio, I guess, and I spend a surprising amount of my day – puzzling over what music I should listen to now.
Mm-hmm.
What music do Lukes want to hear right mm-hmm. now? As a friend of mine would once say about, what do you say? What do Andrews want?
I wasn't sure if you were referring to me or not. Yeah, you know what I always think of is, that's like a weird joke that has a weird origin that is twisted inside my head a million times over. Who is the guy who used to be pretty prominent on This American Life and has passed away now, but he was
David Rakoff?
Yes, David Rakoff. One of his early This American Life pieces was on their Christmas show, and he was talking mm-hmm. about, do you remember this? It was like he had to play Freud.
He was in a window at like Macy's. Or
yes,
something.
And I can't remember exactly why. That's why I'm stumbling all over. But it was a window display for Christmas, but he had to play Freud. And there's a line in it where he says, "What do women want for Christmas?" Kind of messing around with the "What do women want" Freud thing. And so that somehow turned into like when I'm hungry, I'm like, "What do Andrews want for lunch?" And it doesn't make any sense. You now know the origin story. It wasn't worth saying, but that I didn't
know it was.
I didn't even know that you know that I say that. I thought I only said it inside my head. Do I say the loud part quiet and the quiet part loud?
When you do this 3,082 times,
that's so weird.
Really get into each other's brains. I feel like I'm living in the brain of John Bream right now, the writer of this article, because he mentions this one quick thing I'll let listeners in on, which is that it's not out of the realm of a possibility to ask the venue for a refund if a show is short or if you're unhappy with a show. Refunds, if requested, expectations can be different. At nightclubs, when an act is playing two shows in one night, at the Dakota in Minneapolis, ticket holders don't anticipate more than 60 or 75 minutes. But he goes on to point out that if concert goers complain about length or other things, the venue is not against refunding the money. And he goes on to cite a few times where venues will refund money. So if you have a really bad time at a show for whatever reason, it might be worth – I mean, I don't – you know, it sort of depends. I have this weird sliding scale in my mind. If it's an indie artist who's – this is gas money to get to their next location. It's like, I don't know, maybe you just let the $10 go mm-hmm. into the coffers. If it's ZZ Top, which is cited here, and this is where I say I'm living in John Bream's mind now, he's talking about this show that ZZ Top played at the State Fair on Labor Day that everybody was really mad about. And he says ZZ Top certainly left fans frustrated at the State Fair on Labor Day. Hardly befitting of a band that has recorded 15 studio albums and celebrating its golden anniversary. And then he goes, but then the people at the fair said, well, it was weather that cut the show short. They wanted to play more songs. And then John Bream continues, well, why not make that announcement then? Fairgoers who had enjoyed an hour-long opening set by fellow Rock Hall Famers Cheap Trick.
I was going to say ZZ Top
might have been more understanding.
Got to be in the Rock Hall. How did he not mention it? But no, now he got.
He did at the top.
Oh, yeah. He did mention ZZ Top at the top. Okay,
he mentioned ZZ Top. Does their Rock Hall?
Okay.
Does their Rock Hall of Fame career still have legs after 50 years of touring? And then you realize, oh, Cheap Trick was opening for ZZ Top. Do you think they're in the Rock Hall, Andrew? They sure are.
Bet your bottom
sure
dollar.
Are. Wow. They're Rock Hall Famers. So anyway, I guess the point is if you go to a show and you have a miserable time for some reason, including that it's Cardi B and she plays for 40 minutes or something, By the way, I'm not anti-Cardi B. The Cardi B show is cited as something where it was a short show, but she just like put in so much effort and it was so fun. Now, this is where I'm going to take what has been an otherwise pleasant conversation, Andrew, and risk alienating people by acting as if there's quote-unquote quality music and somehow less quality music. But I do think if there's a room full of people that would be more okay, and I'm going more on age with this, where it'd be more okay for the artist to have kind of played their hits and then you take some, you know, you make some Snapchat videos and you kind of like show the show in the background, my guess would be that might be more in the Cardi B verse. Does that make any sense what I'm saying?
I think so.
I can see a bunch of teenagers showing up to a Cardi B show, being really stoked to be there, having a really fun time, but being less hung up on if she played her deep cuts than, yeah, say, somebody who goes to a Bob Mould show,
mm-hmm,
and is like waiting for him to play some specific song off of an album because they're proud that they know what that specific song is.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It depends on who you are. Like, because Bob Mould is going to attract a certain kind of music nerd who might want to really hear a deep cut that really reminds them of, let's just say it, an ex-girlfriend, or maybe even more likely somebody who never dated said imaginary fan, but imaginary, wow, fan spent a lot of time fixating on her. Yet, on the
what
other
was her
hand,
name, Andrew? What was her name?
I don't know what you're talking about, Sarah. I don't know. I could sort of see both. Yeah. On the other hand, though, like if you have some pop star like Cardi B, then you definitely want to hear the hits because she's a hit machine.
Sure.
On the other hand, it's a big dance party, so maybe it kind of doesn't matter exactly,
yeah,
what the songs
maybe
are.
So.
I could see both ways.
Well,
I do want to share with you the best headline I think I've ever seen. I'm just looking up Rock and Roll Hall of Fame stuff now for some reason. And this week, Cleveland. Oh, this is from Cleveland.com. The Plain Dealer has a headline. Every Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee ranked from best to Bon Jovi. I don't even hate,
wow,
Bon Jovi, but that is some shade. I love it.
Or is it that they wanted to go with alliteration?
Well, I have the list in front of me, and it goes.
So they're saying Bon Jovi got the worst.
Yes, ranked as number 227, wow, on this list. Yeah.
Wow.
I just love that headline, from best to Bon Jovi.
It's not penultimate because that's ranking. What's the second worst performance?
Oh, second
what was right
worst?
Above Bon Jovi?
What do you think is the best?
Well, I don't know who's in the Rock Hall because I haven't read enough John Bream, but I would say, oh shit, things are hard. I don't.
It's the most obvious.
Not knowing,
it is the most obvious
Bruce
rock and roll band. Most obvious rock and roll band that had a huge impact on American culture. Even
the Rolling Stones,
the Beatles is what it sounded like.
Wait,
you said,
but
and
how
I'm accepting
did
that? They're the number one.
But how did they perform at the? Are these performances at the
no,
Rock Hall?
No, these
Hall?
Are
What's
inductees. These are inductees. You don't have to perform.
Oh,
you can be dead and still
quality.
Be
quality. Okay, sorry. Well, that yeah. Of course, it's the Beatles. I thought that this was because I'm under the impression that when a band that's still alive gets into the Rock Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, there's a concert. Because remember the whole thing with Dire Straits? I think where it was like, speaking of lawsuits, I feel like Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits didn't going to go play. So like Dire Straits got inducted into the Hall of Fame, played, and it was like none of the people that we think of as being from Dire Straits or something.
I don't
so
remember
that's
that
what
particular
I this was,
story. Okay.
I thought this was saying that Bon Jovi was the worst performance. They're saying they're that actual worst band. I have a real problem with that. If we're talking about what rock and roll is supposed to do, I mean, maybe it's just my era. Living on a Prayer, that's a club banger. I think that is a real stadium rock anthem that holds up.
I have no beef with Bon Jovi. I mean, that album Slippery When Wet is practically a greatest,
yes,
hits record, and it was an album. I mean, they
You Give Love a Bad Name. I mean, those are honestly, those are solid pop. We call them pop metal. What would you call it? Not metal, but just rock and roll songs. Those are solid pop rock and roll songs.
Here's the I have to scroll all the way to the top to get this person.
I
want to
get
name.
The bottom 10. That's really what,
yeah,
what
I'll
I'm
give
interested
it to
in
you.
Here.
So
I
this
don't care
is
at the top.
Written by Troy L. Smith of Cleveland.com, okay, and I'm assuming Cleveland Plain Dealer. If you want to know Troy's rationalization here. He says, there is no band that brings about a crazier debate in my head when it comes to the Rock Hall than Bon Jovi. On one hand, they're a huge band that was successful for quite some time. On the other hand, I find myself asking this question. If you removed Bon Jovi from existence, would it have the would it affect the history of music all that much or at all? In the end, I'm left with thinking that more than any other Rock Hall inductee, Bon Jovi lowers the bar of induction. The band is adequate, but not exceptional. I disagree with that. I think that Bon Jovi was hugely influential for other bands of that era. Like their whole country western bent thing. Like I think they were, I think that music, the history of music would be different if it weren't for Bon Jovi.
I also think that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't think it's it should be measured. Now we're just doing Joe Quazzola. A funny comedian who I'm a fan of and who we've had on LiveWire a couple of times. He has a podcast that's literally called Who Cares About the Rock Hall?
Oh, I love that. So
if you're enjoying this conversation, go over and listen to their show, which I'm sure does a way better job of this because they actually take it kind of seriously but are funny. But to me, it's like the criteria shouldn't be are you influencing – it should not exclusively be are you influencing other bands or if you were removed – from the conversation or from the world, if you got George Bailey'd, would it change music? Because that's like saying the only people inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame were ones people that inspired other players, like the first guy to throw the curveball, and then everyone else after that is an imitator. Like the fact that Bon Jovi thrilled millions of people with their albums and their live shows, that should be enough to me. I mean, I think that like – because well, so who else is down in Bon Jovi territory?
Okay, so this is interesting, and I would like to reiterate too. Like, I really don't care about the Rock Hall, and I hate, and we're doing it. So I don't know why or what I'm doing here, but I one
of
my
your tireless need to involve Cleveland related stories into the show.
I mean, I only like the headline on this, but honestly, I like one of my least favorite things is hearing like. Old white guys debate who should or should not be in the Rock Hall of Fame, and here's what we're doing. But so 227 is Bon Jovi. 226, according to Troy, is Stevie Nicks. Now, he's not hating on Stevie Nicks. He just says that Stevie Nicks is in Fleetwood Mac. Fleetwood Mac is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as they should be. There's nothing about her solo work that that should have made her a solo inductee.
Are you crazy? What's this guy's name?
Troy something.
Troy McClure?
Yeah, Troy McClure.
Are you... You may know me from such columns as I'm Crazy. That is... Stevie Nicks' solo work is so good that... Like, I'm just going to make sure I'm... I want to make sure that the songs I'm about to cite are Stevie Nicks and not... I'm not confusing or conflating with...
I think the White Winged Dove one is a solo song, right? Just like a white winged dove.
Which up until about 2 years ago, I thought was just like The World We Know.
Oh, yeah. Edge of 17, that's called.
Just
by the way.
Like The World We Know.
That makes sense. Huh? Yep.
But like, is Landslide?
No, that's Fleetwood Mac. That's definitely Fleetwood Mac.
That's Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. What about Stand Back?
I don't know that song.
Stand Back, Stand Back. Doesn't she do one? Isn't that with like, what's the song she does with Tom Petty? This is why this is not a good
stop.
A good segment for
stop
us.
Something my heart around. Stop dragging.
Oh, stop dragging my heart around.
I think that's her. I think that's the right song. I could be wrong about that.
Okay, solo career. Let me just get down to this because I want to. I feel like Stevie Nicks' solo stuff is really good. I guess you could argue that as he is that it's a lot of her great stuff was with Fleetwood Mac, and so it's sort of like, it's enough. Maybe he's arguing her solo career is not by itself Rock Hall worthy. But I remember thinking this, because I used to listen to like a Fleetwood Mac Pandora station a lot, and it would then also just kind of go over into Fleetwood or into Stevie Nicks' solo stuff. And what the takeaway I had was that I thought Stevie Nicks was the most talented member of Fleetwood Mac, like the most important member of Fleetwood Mac. So anyway, okay.
Okay, so that's her.
So
her.
What are the other ones on there?
All right, so she was the second. So that's 226 and 227. 225 is Percy Sledge. His legacy, according to Troy, is built on one song alone, When a Man Loves a Woman. While it's one of the greatest soul hits of all time, it wasn't groundbreaking outside of being the first number one hit recorded in Muscle Shoals. So anyway, he says, if having one great song during the 60s gets you in the Rock Hall, this list would be much longer.
he seems to be very fixated on if something broke new ground or not. And to me, again, I just feel like it's, did it make an impact? And the impact could be measured in a few ways. The impact could be measured in a lot of people listened to the song and made out. How many children are alive today and how many grandchildren are alive because of the song When a Man Loves a Woman?
I actually don't really care for that song. And also, but I mean, I do think the idea of being, I mean, if you would describe him as a one hit wonder, I think making the argument that like, if you have one hit is that, but again, I want to say, I mean, maybe he's kind of implying that Percy Sledge shouldn't be in the Rock Hall, but the thesis here isn't, I'm listing the people who should be and shouldn't be. It's just of all the people who are in, these are the people who I think are most deserving and the people who are least deserving. You know, I don't think he's okay. arguing to kick anybody out. Next one is Electric Light Orchestra.
Ooh, a little Jeff Lynne.
How old is Jeff Lynne?
So much younger than you would think, Andrew, mm-hmm. which actually I've – hold on. I've got a quiz here I'd like to – are you sure, by
Nobody
the way, this
knows
is like –
what we're talking about anymore.
Four people know what we're talking about. I'm trying to get to this. I was Googling the Stevie Nicks. I'm still obsessed with trying to figure out what are her solo songs. When I Google Stevie Nicks solo music, Landslide does come up.
I know.
But I don't know if that's just.
I saw that too, and I was even going to try to head that off. I know for a fact that Landslide is on an early Fleetwood Mac record, and I have it. I think Landslide is on their self-titled, which is not their debut. But I think it's confusing because she does a lot of these Fleetwood Mac songs on solo records.
Got it.
Think she does like kind of quote unquote covers of them. So stuff is coming.
Got
out. I mean, I do feel like anytime I'm definitive on something, I'm wrong, so maybe somebody can tell me.
No.
But I'm quite sure
I think this
sure
is kind of in
record.
Your wheelhouse. Yeah, I believe you on that. Electric Light Orchestra, huh? I mean, I guess if I'm being honest, I only know Mr. Blue Sky, so I don't know why that, like, I'm not the decider on this, but yeah, I don't know a whole lot about Electric Light Orchestra outside of that one song. So
me neither.
Maybe there's somewhat of an argument.
I mean, the Traveling Wilburys for me was always like, oh, a bunch of people I know and some bearded guy. What was he in? What's an ELO? I don't know. Like, that was my only connection. Del Shannon is near the bottom of the list at number 223. Shannon never lacked for artists who were willing to honor his legacy. But does that give Shannon a resume better than the artists of the same era like Chubby Checker? No. Anyway,
wait,
Love
Chubby Checker's not in the Rock Hall.
This is
a good podcast. All of a sudden,
yeah,
this is a great. This is some hot topics.
What are we doing?
You're trying to tell me Chubby Checker's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Love and Spoonful, he feels like shouldn't be in there. Of course, John Sebastian. That is.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out.
Yeah, Bobby Darin.
By the way, when we were in Minnesota, I'm bad with always putting faces to names, and there was a whole bunch of folks, and there was somebody who I saw, and I was thinking they were someone who had recently rejoined the organization, and I said, hi, how are you, and gave him a hug, and I said the thing I always say to people, I said welcome back, your dreams were your ticket out, and then I spent the rest of that day's meeting wondering if I had said that to the right person, like,
did they
if
get
the
it
person. Well, no more just, are they even the person who I thought they were who had left the organization and come back?
Right.
Because I could have just said that to a random other person who's just like, what's he talking about? I work here. Like, your dreams were your ticket. Like, huh? But,
No, but I know what you're talking about, and you did it right. The weird thing, I'm going to stop this list, but I will say that suddenly we're deep in, like, I've heard of at least all of these other musicians I've mentioned. Now, like, kind of middling near the bottom is the Paul Butterfield Blues Band. How is that not all the way? You've heard of that? I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Paul Butterfield Blues Band. It's a lot of B's, dude.
It is.
Their name kind of has bounced around. I'm trying to remember. I probably know them from listening to All Blues on KPLU with Juliet Zentelis back in the day. But also, I feel like they were just kind of in a world. They were adjacent to a lot of other bands that were sort of more popular and more well known. That's how I've heard their name. But yeah, that is pretty random. Like, if the Paul Butterfield Blues Band is in the Rock Hall, but Chubby Checker isn't, that feels like a real miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been my number 227, but maybe that's just because I've never heard of them more than Bon Jovi. All right, I know you know about TBTL the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. You can just listen to your soul.
When's this getting in the Rock Hall?
Yeah. Heidecker?
You can be having so much fun. Just remember that life is much fun. You can be number one.
All right, Jessamine.
How great would it be? How great would it be if just somebody at the Rock Hall just was having some sort of aphasia and they nominated whatever this Decker band is, whatever he's doing with this, and then they got to play there, and it was just like I would love to see Tim Heidecker just show up completely in character at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony and play this song. Oh, God, that would be great.
I am going to see Tim and Eric coming up here. You know, I saw that a press release came out for a new sitcom that called Beef House that Tim and Eric are going to be working on. And I sent it to Genevieve just because I thought the concept was just, it's ludicrous and funny. And I sent the press release to Genevieve, kind of ignoring the fact that they're also announcing all these tour dates. And Genevieve said, you want me to get tickets for the Seattle show? And I was like, sure, let's do it. So I will report back on that. I think it's in February, late February. So I've never been to I've never been to a comedy show like that before.
Where's it going to be at?
I can't. That's what I'm trying to look up right now. I'm trying to figure that out. Let's see. Here, Seattle. Oh, Moore Theater. At the Moore Theater now.
Oh,
there.
The Moore Theater.
Oh, I won't be able to go to the Nightlight afterwards because it's a bakery now. All right.
Is it?
Or it's like a cafe or something. Let's reset. Jessamine and Samantha would like to wish a happy belated Blursday to their TBTL baby, Daniela.
Oh, love it.
Power
I'm
out.
I'm in for that. TBTL baby,
yeah.
Acceptable.
So happy Blursday, Daniela. Also, happy birthday to Morgan in California from Lindsay in Tennessee. Lindsay sure. says, we miss you. And are so proud of you and can't wait to have you back here. Sounds like somebody's going back to Tennessee.
Wow, I wonder what Morgan's doing.
Morgan, can't you just settle down? Stay in
one place. Like Morgan's on some kind of secret government program.
What's going on, Morgan? Who'd you kill? Jill and I would like to say a happy Blursday to our five, Zoe. I think you choose boat. Your new birthday name is Targus Targus. Your cute jeans. We love you, Mom and Kevin. There's a lot of inside jokes there. I checked with Mom and Kevin to make sure that none of those were typos. They said that is how they're supposed to be. I think you choose boat. Your new name is Targus Targus. Your cute jeans. We love you, Mom and Kevin.
And this is how old is Zoe?
Five. No, I don't know how old. No, she is.
Oh, she's Zoe,
Zoe is a five.
As
yeah.
a child.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, it's a pretty high level of inside joke comprehension for a five-year-old.
Yeah. Your new birthday name is Targus. Targus. You don't want to rush these things.
No, no, definitely not.
Lori says, I'd like to wish a very happy Blursday to my real-life friend, Amanda G. We've known each other for at least 15 years and just figured out that we were both 10s a couple of years ago when we spent Aww. 2 days together.
Cute.
They were spending 2 days together running and riding in a van on a Ragnar race. What's a Ragnar race?
Oh, yeah. It's this thing where you you have a team of competitors, and there's different elements to it. I believe there's some cycling involved. Well, I could be confusing this ever so slightly with something called the Sea to Ski race up here in Bellingham, where there's people riding bikes, people running, and then people also doing some swimming or boat stuff. Ragnar is some kind of team competition where you've got a whole bunch of people, and some people are running different distances, and then you pick them up in a van, and then a new person runs, and it's a whole thing. It's both physically strenuous and also a fun kind of team-building exercise. I know lots of people up here do that. Yeah.
Well, that was
a terrible description of Ragnarok, but it's as good as I could do.
Ragnar.
Ragnarok is a Thor franchise.
Yes,
movie.
Exactly. But anyway, so that's how Lori and Amanda G, friends who've known each other for a decade and a half, figured out that they were both 10s.
That's so funny. I said this last maybe last Blursdays or at least recently. I'm shocked if I meet someone in the wild and they've heard of TBTL. How shocking must it be to the 10s?
Yeah, right.
If they go to a place of work or something and there's someone else who knows what they're talking about, that's got to be amazing.
Yeah, and then they can just start saying targets to each other and everybody knows, which isn't even our joke. Maybe Heidecker will bring that
Speaking
up in
of
the
which.
Show.
By the way, Ragnar, approximately 200-mile relay race. Mm. So I don't think there's – I think it's just running. I think it's all running. I don't think there's any other vehicles involved other than the van that drops people off at certain points. But it's a 200-mile relay race.
Interesting. I could do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that today. Lindsay says, happy birthday, Taya. I love working with you at Tossie Design and growing our sales. You're such a wonderful, thoughtful friend and a kick-ass businesswoman. See, that language is salty.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindsay says, in case the 10s don't know it, now you have a friend in the diamond business. It's Taya.
Move over, Tom Shane.
That's right. Didn't we just turn that drop down by like 20%? Amy wants
Weird
to wish,
flex, but okay.
Amy wants to wish a happy 50th Blursday to Chad. She says to us, thank you for bringing such a sense of community to his life and so much humor and joy, and for giving this long married couple things to talk about that don't usually end in fights. We love discussing how we are Andrew or Luke and then use that to figure out our various personality and relationship quirks. That's from Amy to Chad. And by the way, Amy just, I think Amy is maybe not as familiar with the inside workings of TBTL. I'm not sure, but she also donated $50 to go along with this Thursday message.
Aime.
Yeah, so that was really, really sweet. So I don't know if she wanted Thank me to you. Mention that, but she had mentioned that in a note, and I thought it was really sweet. So thank you, Amy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chad.
That's, you know, it's not required, but it's always appreciated. A little gratuity. Where are we going to go with that $50, Andrew?
A little pay to play. That's how we make the Blursday segment fun.
Grease the skids.
Sure.
Yeah, you want to get Chad's Blursday message to the top of the list.
You want to get your Blurs wet?
Yeah. Ugh. No, I don't.
I was really hoping that'd be a show title because I am out of Blursdays now, and I don't have any show titles.
Who cares about the Ragnarok? Wait, no, what?
The Ragnarok Hall of Fame and Museum.
All right, I'll accept it. Yeah, okay. I guess that's it then. Should we go out with, we usually go out with Words by Doves, but is there something related to this? Since we spent so much time talking? Ooh.
Edge of 17.
I had a thought.
It's got Dove in it. No? That's the Like a White Winged Dove by.
Oh, that's what that song is called?
Yeah.
It's called Edge of 17?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
What were you going to say, though? I kind of bullied you into that.
I was going to throw out some Aerosmith, but there's just only one Aerosmith song I like, and I always play it on the show, so. Mm. So that's fine. We can skip it. If you really need to hear the song F-I-N-E by Aerosmith, just listen on your own time. I have a can the beginning of this song, did the Scissor Sisters sample this in their cover of Comfortably Numb? I'm sorry I'm doing this right now. But like, I just has always been something that's been in the back of my mind. You know the Scissor Sisters?
I know of them. I don't really know anything about them.
They do this really bitchin' cover of the song Comfortably Numb. I'm going to just play it for you, just the beginning of it. I'm probably going to have to look at a Geico ad or something because I'm playing it on YouTube. And then tell me if this is the beginning of Edge of 17, just as soon as... Oh, good. It's an ad for Shen Yun. Really good stuff.
What is it?
Are you kidding me? Tomorrow, block out 4 hours. Were you joking?
Or no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Have you seen those billboards everywhere of the like traditional Chinese or Taiwanese dancers? They're just like always jumping and they have these flowy robes on. It's called Shen Yun, S-H-E-N-Y-U-N.
I don't think I know about it.
Okay, I don't want to get bogged down in this. Let's talk about it tomorrow. But that is so interesting because I don't think that if you live in a modern American city and you walk with your eyes looking at things, I don't think there's any way. Maybe just in
so you have to leave your. You say you have to leave your house for this?
Oh, this explains it. This explains a lot of it. Anyway, okay. Actually, Gia Tolentino wrote this amazing Shen Yun piece in the New Yorker not that long ago. Maybe I'll reread it tonight and then we can talk about it tomorrow. It's a whole weird thing. Now listen to the beginning of this. And this Scissor Sisters, it's a Scissor Sisters cover of a Pink Floyd song, okay? So how's that?
I know that you've played this for me before.
Yeah. But, okay. Okay, now is that not the beginning of Edge of 17?
It sounds like it. I am very distracted. As a matter of fact, the reason I wasn't being more yes and about that conversation we're just having about the billboards is I have for some reason lost internet on the computer that I'm playing stuff from. We're still talking, so I need you to play everything. God. I'm sorry about this.
That's okay. The song is called Edge of 17.
Edge of 17 by Stevie Nicks.
Okay, let me go. Let me see if I can find it. Now I'm entering a dark, murky world called Apple Music that never friggin' works for me. Which is, it's gonna happen now, Andrew, because I've moved off of this platform for my drops. I'm officially because like right now I just put Edge of 17 into the search function on my whatever you'd call it Apple Player. Okay, now mind you, I pay whatever it is, $15 a month, whatever Apple Music costs me, and per always. It's just spinning the wheel of death. Mm-hmm. That's all that's happening. So now I'm going to go to YouTube. Also, I'm sure that I have that song downloaded in my system, but it won't come up either. So let me go to the internet and find it as well. Although now I'm stuck on a movie called Edge of 17.
The whole thing is falling apart. My entire computer is now restarting. I have no idea what's going on over here. I just lost all this work.
Oh, no.
Yeah, whatever.
Also, by the way, guess what? When I try to play this Stevie Nicks song, guess what the ad is? Shen Yun. Something stinks in Shen Yun Mark. Okay, so listen to the beginning. Is that sound the same thing?
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if the Scissor Sisters had to donate all of the proceeds from their Pink Floyd cover to Stevie Nicks. You got a real Verve versus Rolling Stones sitch.
That's very interesting.
We're going to go out with this song. Thanks for listening, everybody. Andrew, I hope that your computer recovers because that's going to suck. When you say you lost all this work, you mean were you were making kind of notes for the posting of the show?
I just had a couple of emails open that I had started before we dialed up.
Let's be honest, during my intro. It's fine, I get it.
Wait, you did an intro? Yeah, I guess that is when I did it. Yeah, wish me all luck. Right. I'm sorry I was so distracted there at the end. That was like the worst imitation of a power out for a show possible since everything just kind of collapsed on me.
That's all right. I think the listeners were probably done with it anyway.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess so.
I think they're fine with this being the end. Thanks for listening, folks. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. So definitely please tune in for that. Until then, enjoy your Thursday. And please remember to mount too tall.
And good luck to all. Just
flower out.